there is a very dangerous and very effective destabilization campaign underway against this president, his administration, and his agenda. And what I hope that the president and his senior aides understand is that these forces are not just looking to delegitimize him. We often talk about that. Sure, they want to do that. They want to personally destroy him, destroy his presidency, and they would like to see the man in prison. I hope that the president understands I am not overstating this, having been a victim of this myself. They are out for blood. And the reason they have to destroy him is that Donald Trump is an alien organism that has been injected into the body politic by the American people to reform it. He must not be allowed to succeed. They have swarmed him. They have swarmed everybody around him in order to reject him out of the system, just like any alien organism. He must not be allowed to succeed. And I hope that everybody around him now understands that this is a war and that they started a long time ago. But they will not end until they get the president of the United States.
Hey guys, I'm Monica Crowley, and this is the Monica Crowley Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me as we begin yet another week in Biden's America. Let's all pray for our survival. This is your go-to for hot liberty, a safe space for all of us thought criminals, independent thinkers, and yes, happy warriors. Don't forget to check me out on social media. On Instagram, I'm at @MonicaCrowley_. And on Twitter and True Social, I'm at Monica Crowley. Also by email, I am at MonicaCrowleyPodcast@gmail.com. So drop me a note. Let me know what you're thinking. All right, later in the week, and we've got a really big news week this week. I mean, it seems like every week is a really big news week. And it is because we are in the midst of absolute insanity. Later in the week, Charlie Spearing of the Daily Mail is going to be here. He's got a fantastic new book exposing Kamala Harris. So good. So do not miss this. We're going to expose Kamala and we're going to have a lot of laughs because how can you not talk about Kamala and laugh? So you're not going to want to miss that. Plus, we're going to have a full breakdown of today's Super Tuesday results. I mean, President Trump's wrapping this up in pretty short order. And we're going to have a preview of Joe Biden's State of the Union address, which is really late this year. Usually it's end of January, early February. But the Biden White House, you know, communists always just do whatever they want. So they scheduled this for early March, which is very interesting. He's doing it on Thursday, so we're going to talk about that as well. Big shows coming up. Today, we are going to deal with a really big idea that could help save the country from hitting a wall at 1,000 miles an hour. And the guy who proposed it, Lee Rizzuto, is going to be here. President Trump loves him. He's a friend of President Trump's. And Trump loves his idea. He's going to tell us what it is. Very exciting. That's coming up. But first, the Monica memo. The Supremes tell left-wing states, stop in the name of love and the Constitution. I want to make a really important point about what we saw here yesterday, but first, the details. It is unanimous, which, I mean, in this day and age of rabid partisanship and everything political, it's very rare to get anything unanimous in this country. But the Supreme Court yesterday did give us a unanimous decision, put a stop to the insanity of the communists, at least in one regard, and said, yo, sorry, because of the 14th Amendment text, the states do not have the right to kick President Trump off the ballot. That power rests with Congress. We're going to get to that here in a second. So this ruling, 9-0, came in the nick of time, too, because, of course, today is Super Tuesday, and I believe 16 states are voting in their primaries today. The Supreme Court also made clear that the state, if having such power, would then decide which candidates were eligible for the ballot, would cause chaos in the country. You think? And of course, communists are always about chaos. This is my much bigger point we're going to get to here in just a moment. candidates, the court said, would be eligible in some states but not other states, and would ultimately conclude with a handful of states deciding a presidential election, or frankly, any election, and that would further divide the country. The three leftist judges, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson, said the following, quote, "Allowing Colorado to kick Trump off the ballot would, we agree, create a chaotic state-by-state patchwork at odds with the nation's federalism principles." Well, what do you know? You got the communists on the court actually saying, even this is a bridge too far. This decision is obviously going to impact the other communists who have tried to remove Trump from the ballot in their states like Illinois and Maine. All of those efforts are now moot. The question is moot, thanks to the Supreme Court. Trump posted on Truth Social, quote, "Big win for America." And of course, he is right. United we stand, divided, which is the goal of the communists and the deep state, we fall, which again is the ultimate objective. Here is President Trump at Mar-a-Lago reacting to the decision.
"Today it was a very important decision. We're very well crafted, and I think it will go a long way toward bringing our country together, which our country needs. And they worked long, they worked hard, and frankly they worked very quickly on something that will be spoken about 100 years from now and 200 years from now, extremely important. Essentially, you cannot take somebody out of a race because an opponent would like to have it that way. And it has nothing to do with the fact that it's the leading candidate, whether it was the leading candidate or a candidate that was well down on the totem pole. You cannot take somebody out of a race. The voters can take the person out of the race very quickly, but a court shouldn't be doing that, and the Supreme Court saw that very well."
He's absolutely right, of course, like he's right on everything. And his demeanor yesterday was very calm, very measured, very balanced. And I've noticed that more and more. You know, it's one thing for him to do a rally where he's the entertainer, he's the showman. But I've noticed, and even this morning he was back on Fox and Friends, which I don't think he's done in a while. When he's talking about the Supreme Court, he's talking about policy. When he's even talking about the campaign, he is calm, he is measured, he is balanced. It's less about personal grievance and the dramas. Now, he has every right to defend himself, of course, against this communist onslaught and the lawfare, of course. And of course, he has every right to be angry, pissed off, and righteous in that anger. But I have noticed that when he's making these appearances, he is increasingly more measured. And I think that's great advice that he is getting because, look, in order to make the changes in this country and save the country, he's got to win. And in order to win, you've got to attract all types. It's not just me and you who are rabidly MAGA and love President Trump, but it's everybody, people who are skeptical of him. He's got to attract more women. He's got to attract more black voters. And he is increasing his margin in all of those categories, which is freaking fantastic. But he's got to attract ever more. And now he is actually saying that he wants to target a landslide. Now, again, I hope that that is the case, but this country is so divided. The left has really done a number on America over many decades, so we are incredibly polarized. And then, of course, you've got all the institutions of power like the DOJ, the FBI, the judicial system now, the media, big tech. They're all arrayed against him. So while we will all work toward a landslide, how realistic is that? I don't know. We're going to find out in November, but we have to fight for every inch. So he came out very measured way, talked about this decision and said, you know, he thanks the Supreme Court, but there are other bigger decisions coming down the pike here on presidential immunity and other things that a lot of legal experts are saying, you know, you're not going to get 9-0 these next couple of cases here. Look, I don't care. It can be 5-4. which, you know, raises all kinds of other issues. But as long as it's 5-4 and we get across the finish line on these cases, okay, let's deal with it once he becomes president. What did Nikki Haley say about this decision? Well, she hasn't commented. Instead, she's out there celebrating her only primary victory so far in the swamp of Washington, D.C., which should tell you everything about who is backing Nikki Haley and what her candidacy is all about. 98% Democrat, I think, in Washington, D.C., and girlfriend won with, I think, about 1,200 votes. Okay, Trump didn't even bother competing there. He's getting railroaded there, and he just said, I'm not wasting my time or resources in D.C. But Nikki Haley is out there going, woo, 1-1, woo. The communist lunatics are, of course, out there calling this Supreme Court decision a, quote, major blow to democracy. Anything that doesn't go their way is always a blow to democracy. They are the blowers of democracy, okay? And they're out there. The people screaming the most about threats to democracy are themselves the actual threats to democracy. They are working around the clock to undermine and destroy the Constitution. So anytime anything doesn't go their way, and most things do since they control everything, but when you get the rare victory for America, the Constitution, normal Americans, they go absolutely ballistic. Here are some of them having a complete meltdown yesterday on CNN.
Unfortunately for America, the court isn't necessarily wrong that this is the way the framers wanted it to be. They wanted Congress, the people who are closest to their constituents, to be able to make the rules of the laws. That doesn't change the fact that because of gerrymandering in the House and all kinds of other issues, they're not doing their job on a lot of these big issues.
Yeah. I agree. It's very unlikely, close to impossible that Congress will take action. But this is now a fair question that Manu Raju, Melanie Zanona should be asking members of Congress. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to pass legislation that would give us rules for how this works? It could only be in the future, by the way.
That, of course, was Donna Bash. And she is talking about, well, unfortunately for America, the court is right. Yo, unfortunately for America, we still have CNN. The woman who originally brought this case, she looks like she's about 13 years old, the Colorado Secretary of State, Jenna Griswold, she originally brought this whole idea and the Colorado Supreme Court upheld it. Here is girlfriend Jenna expressing her extreme disappointment in SCOTUS.
My larger reaction is disappointment. I do believe that states should be able under our Constitution to bar oath-breaking insurrectionists. And ultimately, this decision leaves open the door for Congress to act to pass authorizing legislation. But we know that Congress is a nearly non-functioning body. So ultimately, it will be up to the American voters to save our democracy in November.
So you have these young revolutionaries who have been installed in these positions, and don't come to me and say, well, Monica, they've all been elected to these roles. They have been installed. They are supported by George Soros and his money across the board. I don't care if you're talking about secretaries of state like this girl or DAs like Alvin Bragg and Fannie Willis. They're all the same. They are communist revolutionaries who have been installed because they've had the tremendous financial backing of Soros and the left. They've gotten into these local roles, and man, have they gone wild. Which is the whole point. You know, guys, I've made this point before, and it bears repeating, that for decades, while we have all been focused on the international level, like what the Russians are doing, what the Chinese are doing, what the Iranians are doing. And again, all extremely important. We should be focused on that. But we had our eyes trained on the international realm and the national realm, the presidency, Congress, etc. While we've been over here doing that, the left has been over there focused on the local level. Saul Alinsky, community organizing. It's no, coincidence that Hillary Clinton studied under the man himself, Saul Alinsky. It's no coincidence that Barack Obama studied Saul Alinsky and then began his political career and activism as a community organizer. The left understands that real change happens at the local level. They start prairie fires, block by block. This is what Alinsky's whole philosophy was. This is what the communist philosophy is. You start brush fires, and that's how you make change, block by block, precinct by precinct. Michelle Obama's father was a precinct captain in Chicago. You don't think Michelle is political? Give me a break. You don't think Michelle wants to be president? Give me a break. So all of these people have been installed over the left's grand project now for a long time. Jenna Griswold, the Colorado Secretary of State, again, 13 years old, was installed in that position for this exact reason. And most secretaries of state across the country are in the exact same mold. So she's out there whining. Speaking of whining, Keith Olbermann, who is an absolute lunatic, he went on X and tweeted, quote, "The Supreme Court has betrayed democracy." Again, this is all projection, all of these people, pure projection, accusing our side, and in this case, the Supreme Court, of what they themselves are doing. Olbermann, quote, "The Supreme Court has betrayed democracy. Its members, including Jackson, Kagan, and Sotomayor, have proved themselves inept at reading comprehension. And collectively, the court has shown itself to be corrupt and illegitimate." So somebody needs to do a wellness check on Olbermann, okay? Make sure that he's okay. Other communists on X also having meltdowns, shrieking that we have a rogue SCOTUS picking on Clarence Thomas, even though Ketanji Brown Jackson, arguably the most left-wing member of the court, also agreed with this decision. Other people out there talking about how our system of checks and balances is kaput. And then others saying that we need to dissolve the Supreme Court. I think that was also Olbermann being his usual sober-minded self. Dissolve the Supreme Court. Now, almost immediately, Democrat Representative Jamie Raskin ran to the cameras and the mics, and he was saying that he and his fang-fang-banging colleague Eric Swalwell are working on legislation to be able to remove Trump from the ballot via Congress, which is what SCOTUS said. SCOTUS said, look, it's not up to the states, it's up to Congress to do this, so we're kicking it back. And Raskin and Swalwell, who banged a Chinese spy, are out there saying, okay then, so we will introduce legislation to remove Trump from the ballot. So we will watch where that goes. But again, guys, this is my much bigger point about all of this. We are in the midst of an ongoing and long-standing Marxist revolution. Marxist communists, because they are revolutionaries, they are very impatient to remove all of their opposition and slam in their agenda. Their agenda is destruction. They need to tear down what exists now so that they can rebuild it as a communist model. So revolutionaries are always extremely impatient, and that leads to all kinds of rash decisions that sometimes work for them and sometimes don't. So in this case, the Supreme Court gave them a setback on their communist unconstitutional attempt to remove Donald Trump from the ballot. So they're pulling out all the stops. They're going to try a different avenue. Understand this about communists. They never stop. They never sleep. They never rest. They never just accept defeat. They always plow forward. So for them, it's two steps forward, maybe one step back, but they are still advancing the ball. And in this case, you know, the four women on the court, including Amy Coney Barrett, who, you know, they all went with the 9-0 decision, but they all wrote in a way kind of dissenting views. And Amy Coney Barrett was like, can't we all get along? I mean, seriously. So she has no concept of the nature of the war that we are in. Clarence Thomas does. Samuel Alito does. Gorsuch does, I think. John Roberts is another, oh, we have to preserve the institutional integrity of the court. Again, no concept of how late in the hour it is. Look, these communists want to dissolve their institution, kick them out of a job, or so pack the Supreme Court that their voices will be so diluted they won't matter. And they don't see it. They don't see it. So they are like voting or going with their own demise and the demise of the country because they don't see it or they don't want to see it. I don't know. But this is very serious business. The other big point about this is that we're all out here celebrating this SCOTUS decision. And yes, I mean, it's better than how it could have gone, right? They could have said, yeah, Trump can get thrown off the ballot. So it is better than how it could have gone. So it's a nice decision. I'm glad we have it on the books now as precedent. But understand something here, guys. This little girl, Jenna Griswold out of Colorado, and the Colorado Supreme Court, and the communists trying to do this to Trump in Maine and Illinois and all these other states that have tried this, they knew that this was unconstitutional. They knew that this was an abuse of power and unlawful when they did it. They knew it was all likely to be overturned. Look, guys, in their minds, if this had succeeded, great. But they didn't expect it to succeed. That wasn't the point. For communists, twofold. One, the process is the punishment. And two, it's always about advancing the ball. So in this case, even though they lost, they have now normalized this kind of argument. And the next go around, you better believe it's not going to be 9-0. It may be 8-1 or 5-4. We don't know. But they have advanced the ball here, and that is what communists do. Again, they are impatient. They would have loved a great SCOTUS decision yesterday to accelerate their plans. But they will accept merely advancing the ball and normalizing this kind of outrageous unconstitutional activity. Do you understand what I'm saying here? We are sharing the country with outright communists that want the destruction of the Constitution and therefore the country, and they want you eliminated as a political force. That is where we are right now. Okay? So understand what's going on. Everybody's celebrating. Ain't this great? The fact that this was even before the Supreme Court is a victory for the communists. Absorb that point before you run out there going, oh, ain't this great? Well, yeah, I mean, we got to this point, so we'll accept the victory here. But understand that for the left, the point is always moving forward, marching ahead, normalizing their communist agenda, tearing down the institutions. Every time they propose something like this, whether it's this stuff going to the Supreme Court and the next thing will be presidential immunity, whether it's that or whether whether it's that or this or any of the stuff making it through the system, none of these communists really expect victories on this. That's not the point for them. The point is, one, process is the punishment. Drain Trump's resources, keep him distracted, raise all kinds of doubts about him, try to chip away at his lead, and also advancing the ball by normalizing communist activity and the agenda and tearing at our institutions. That's what all this is about, guys. So savor the victory yesterday, but understand where we are in the country. Right? Speaking of where we are in the country, before we get to Lee Rizzuto and his great idea to save America, or help to anyway, the border. So, you know, last week, both Biden and Trump were at the border. Trump actually went to a major entry point for illegal crossers, and that is Eagle Pass, Texas. Biden chose to go to Brownsville, where you've got a mere trickle. And it's all thanks to Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, who put in the razor wire and it's actually enforcing the border because the feds won't. I don't know if you guys saw 60 Minutes on Sunday, but they spent an entire segment scratching their heads as to why Texas is being so aggressive in enforcing the border when it's the feds' job. Well, the feds are obviously, you know, and I argued this last week on this show, the feds are obviously not enforcing the border. So people argue the feds are not doing their job. And I argue, you know what, guys, this is their job. The communists want the wide open border in order to erase the border and get us on the Great Reset and flood the country with illegals and get them all voting. Mass mail-in voting? Hey, that is tailor-made for illegal immigrants. So, you know, 60 Minutes out there scratching their heads. Well, gosh golly, you know, it's the feds' job, so why is Texas doing it? Well, the feds under Biden are doing their job of keeping the border wide open. Texas has a difference of opinion, 60 Minutes, and they invoked their invasion clause in their state constitution, which gives them the right to fight back and try to save their state. So 60 Minutes can't figure that out. Or they do, and they're just pushing propaganda, which is the more likely story here, because none of these people are dumb. They're just communists. So you had Biden going to the border because he sees now the illegal alien invasion is now the number one issue, or at least tied with the economy and jobs, and it's tearing down the Democrat Party. So he went to the border. Trump went to the border. Listen to Donald Trump. This was yesterday. You know, keep in mind the border and illegal immigration is one of, if not the top, branded issue for Trump. He was literally talking about this for decades, certainly since June of 2015. Listen to him telling Biden to close the border now.
The other thing I say to President Biden, close the borders now. This is not sustainable for our country. It's not sustainable for our cities. Our country is under siege. This is a violent thing that you've done. And many people are dying. Many, many people are dying. They die on the trip up. They die going through the border. And they die in our country.
Exactly right, of course, and Trump is gaining so much traction with all Americans, but certainly traditionally Democrat constituencies like Black voters, Latino voters, women, and young people. We got this slew of new polling, including a Fox News poll and a New York Times Siena poll, which shows that Trump is gaining ground like crazy. With all of these groups, he's got 46% of the Latino vote. He's gaining ground with Black voters. And with women, I think he's up by 1 point. Now, I know we're far out from the election and things could change in a million different ways, okay? But as of right now, he is gaining serious ground and the left is panicked. One of the biggest reasons, if not the biggest reason, is this wide open border and having all of our states and communities decimated by the tsunami of illegal aliens coming in. The official number is about 8 million. Zzz, wrong. In the last 3 years, it's probably closer to 12, 13, maybe 15 million. We have no idea. So Trump, pounding his signature issue, close the borders now. Biden, of course, will not do that, but it's good for Trump to get out there every day, all day, saying close the borders now, talking about the illegal alien invasion. That's how he's attracting so many core Democrat voters. Now, here is Biden's, until recently, because he resigned and stepped down, but for, I think, the first two and a half years, Raul Ortiz was Biden's Border Patrol chief. Listen to him saying that he never once had a conversation with either Biden or Biden's border czar, Kamala.
I've never had one conversation with the president or the vice president for that matter. And so I was the chief of the Border Patrol. I commanded 21,000 people. That's a problem.
I just saw 50 people today who had just crossed the border illegally. So something's not working.
We need to make sure that Central America, South America, Mexico, that those regions understand that if you pay a smuggler and you cross in between the ports of entry and you do not have a legitimate claim to some sort of asylum benefit, you're going to be sent back.
So imagine wide open border and you are the president in charge of the border and you have not had a conversation with your Border Patrol head. Again, this tells you exactly what is going on. This is the plan. This is not incompetence. This is not, they don't know what they're doing. This is the plan. So when you are executing the plan and doing your job, then there's no reason to talk to your Border Patrol chief, right? You don't want to hear him yapping about how out of control the open border is, how people are being killed by the drug cartels and 100,000 Americans getting killed by fentanyl coming across the border, begun in China, put together by the drug cartels, being brought over by illegal aliens to kill your brothers, sisters, friends, and community members. You don't want to hear that. You don't want to hear any of this. The violence, the destruction, the dead bodies. You don't want to hear it, so you just don't talk to the head of your Border Patrol. Not one conversation in two and a half years. In fact, Biden has had his first conversation with Border Patrol last Thursday when he went to the border. So again, this tells you this is the plan. One final note on this. Donald Trump called Laken Riley's parents. Laken Riley, of course, was the 22-year-old nursing student who was kidnapped and brutally bludgeoned to death by an illegal immigrant, Jose Antonio Ibarra from Venezuela. She was killed on February 23rd. Ibarra came into the country 2 years ago. 2 years ago, was allowed to float around the country. He's got other charges against him as well. But this beautiful, promising young nursing student murdered at the hands of an illegal, and we've seen so much of this. Laken Riley is a beautiful face of this absolute catastrophe, and President Trump called her parents to express sympathy and to tell them that once he becomes president again, these days of innocent Americans being murdered, slaughtered in their own communities are over. Just as they were over in his first term, they will be over again. And do you know that Joe Biden won't even say her name? The White House put out a statement, very generic statement of sort of sympathy, but wouldn't even name her in the statement. And I doubt he's going to name her at the State of the Union address Thursday night. No way. No way. And again, it's because communists do not see the individual. Communists only see power and control over other human beings. That is the only thing that drives them. This is why, you know, Stalin could slaughter tens of millions of his countrymen. This is one of the reasons why they were okay with the Ukrainian famine that killed millions of their fellow countrymen. They don't care about the individual. They only care about the collective and their power over the collective. Understand that point, guys. This is what we are dealing with. Don't keep going out there scratching your heads. Why won't Biden say your name? Oh, politics. It's so much bigger than that. It is about this Marxist revolution that is driven solely by the need for power and control over you. Get that. All right, let's hit a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to a friend of President Trump's who served in his administration, who came up with what I think is a brilliant idea to help save America. He's going to join us. President Trump loves the idea, too. And members of Congress now are cottoning to it. So he's going to be here to tell us what it is. You're not going to want to miss it. Sit tight. Okay, guys, we've got a lot of economic turmoil all around us. I don't have to tell you how crazy inflation is. Just go to your grocery store. You see it every single day. Well, financial experts thought we were in the clear. They were anticipating maybe 6 interest rate cuts by the Fed this year. And then the inflation data came out, and of course, it's higher than expected. Guys, this kind of inflation isn't going away. It can't. It's too entrenched. The U.S. is $34 trillion in the hole, and yet we keep printing money, which pushes the prices you pay every day even higher. So you can either bury your head in the sand, or you can do something about it. Diversify a portion of your savings into gold with Birch Gold Group. Gold is your hedge against inflation, and Birch Gold makes it so easy to own. They'll help you convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold. And the best part? You don't pay a penny out of pocket. I know Philip Patrick and the good folks over at Birch Gold, and they're really smart and good people. They will take excellent care of you. So just text Monica to 989-898 and get your free info kit on gold. Then talk to a precious metals specialist on how to protect your savings from persistent inflation with gold. Text Monica to 989-898 right now. Well, I am delighted to welcome to the show Lee Rizzuto. Lee is a prominent businessman. He's a longtime friend and supporter of President Trump, who appointed him to serve as U.S. Consul General to Bermuda. He joins us today because he's come up with an incredible idea, which is now being embraced by President Trump and by members of Congress. He's here to tell us about it. Lee, welcome.
Thank you, Monica, and welcome to you, and great to be with your fantastic audience.
Well, thank you, and it's great to have you with us today. And the reason I reached out to you is, well, number one, you are fantastic, and we met in person recently, I think over the last couple of months in Florida, and you and your wife are just absolutely lovely. But the main reason I reached out to you is because you recently wrote a piece for Breitbart, along with Alfredo Ortiz of the Job Creators Network, in which you proposed a novel idea for how to start closing our massive budget deficit. Can you tell us about it?
Absolutely. The concept is very straightforward. And I think most important to start with is our politicians, our elected officials are spending our money. This is taxpayer money that every day when you hear about these bills, whether it's $1 billion or $100 billion or $1 trillion, they throw around billions today like we were kids in a park throwing around frisbees. And it's just mind-boggling. So the concept here is very straightforward. We certainly, I'm all for helping any of our allies, and, you know, quite frankly, perhaps sometimes maybe even if it's not an ally. However, we should start taking a more business approach and a more responsible approach to the taxpayer dollars that we're spending. The position is very simple. Instead of just giving this money away as a grant, let's make it a loan payment. And that loan payment could be case by case, meaning in some instances, it could be, who knows, maybe 1 year or 5 years, and in other cases, 10 years or 20 years or 40 years. That could be reflective of the financial condition of the ally that we're helping and the overall situation. But regardless, if it's a loan and not just a gift by the taxpayer, it's going to be responded with more responsibly and more prudently. And in addition, if we're paying interest for this money that we're giving away, then certainly the ally that we're helping should also be responsible to pay that interest back to us.
You know, when I first read your article proposing this idea, Lee, I was like stunned into silence because the idea of making foreign aid into loans rather than outright grants, it's so common sense. And I thought, how did nobody think of this before? Or maybe they did, and the idea was crushed by the regime, by the deep state, by the uni party. I don't know, but it's so obvious on the face of it, is it not?
It is. And listen, it's not a unique idea, and it's been done in the past. And for whatever reasons, we've gotten away from that direction, which, again, you know, for the benefit of the taxpayer, it makes no sense, particularly with the fact here we are with this enormous debt as a country. We have all types of economic issues and inflationary problems, and our politicians want to just keep giving money away. The one that I really scratched my head with most recently, they had earmarked, I believe it was $5 billion in the recent aid package for Taiwan. Taiwan's not even in a war, and already we want to give them money. And miraculously, they figured out how they could do a calculation of $5 billion. They can't figure out how to give you your IRS tax return on time, but overnight, they can figure out how to give away $5 billion to Taiwan.
Yeah, no, the whole system is incredibly corrupt because they use foreign aid as a slush fund. And there's so much corruption and so many hands in the till, so many greedy fingers working this money that God knows where the money ends up in the first place. So do you think, well, let me ask you this, Lee, how would this work? I mean, obviously, there's a whole foreign aid part of the U.S. government now. If we were to flip most, if not all of this, into loans to governments, to institutions, to whoever might need it, how would it work? How would these loans be structured?
Well, again, it should be, I believe, reflective of the financial ability of the different allies that we're dealing with. So you take, as example, Israel. Out of 177 countries that we rate GDP on a world monitor, Israel is ranked number 27. United States is number one, granted, but there's, you know, countless countries that are, you know, not as strong as Israel, such as, you would be quite surprised, United Arab Emirates, Hong Kong, Singapore, Luxembourg. All these other countries that Israel is far stronger than as far as GDP, you know, only is supports the argument or the position to say, hey, you know, they could pay us back. They need help right now. And yes, we as an ally should help them. But they financially can pay us back. And based on their financial ability, then we should structure the loan to what is intelligent. So is it 5 years? Is it 10 years? In other cases, maybe it should be 20 or 40 years. But certainly they have the ability, they need the help, but let them, with their ability, pay us back.
So how would these loans be enforced? Like a regular loan if you go to a bank? I mean, what would be the enforcement mechanism to make sure that these countries or groups pay it back?
China does a lot of infrastructure development around the world, and perhaps, you know, I dare to say we should, you know, open our eyes and learn a little bit from China in this instance, that what China does is they collateralize those loans. So if there is if a country has oil, or if a country has rare earth minerals, or has some other monetary, you know, asset, that we should attach and have the ability to call those loans. In addition, I think there's something very important that I learned going through the diplomatic process is it's amazing how many countries consistently vote against us in the UN. So the United States takes, you know, positions that, you know, we're very supportive of, and only to find out many of our allies vote against us, those same allies that we're constantly giving aid to. And up to now, you know, there was no need to pay back that money. So that could also potentially be a provision that if you choose to consistently vote against the United States and the UN, we're going to call that note that we loan to you.
I love that. I absolutely love it. I mean, it's not just conditionless money anymore to the tune of tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars, but it's conditioned And that is a way to not only rein in our budget deficit, but also respect the American taxpayer. What would happen, Lee, in the event of a default? What would the consequences be for that country or group getting the money?
You know, I believe we have excellent diplomatic relations and mechanisms that we could amicably work out in situations inclusive of a default. So can we deal with it responsibly without crushing an ally? Absolutely. The specifics of it today, I wouldn't be able to, you know, get into those details, but I'm fully confident we could certainly work that out.
Yeah, the consequences of default is something to look at, I think, really importantly here. President Trump loves the idea. He embraced it on social media the other day, and I do believe he will implement it when he is president again. But he is going to encounter tremendous resistance to this idea from the deep state, right? You've got the State Department, you've got possibly the U.S. Treasury, you've got members of Congress that are going to oppose this, and they control the purse strings. So how would you recommend President Trump, when he is reelected and wants to go forward with this, how do you recommend that he navigate that?
Well, I think this becomes potentially the starting point of addressing our total economic condition, our national deficit, our spending deficits. So, you know, you take example, currently the interest on our deficit is about $750 billion, or roughly $2 billion a day, or just under $100 million per hour. So when you speak to the taxpayer and the president speaks to Congress and waves that flag and says, hey, this is taxpayer money that we have to recover, that we're responsible to find solutions on how to climb out of this debt and make it a net positive as opposed to a continued net negative on how we do business.
It will be a very effective starting point for that conversation. Lee, I think you're exactly right. And it opens up the broader conversation I want us to have right now, which is talking about where we are. We have this $34 trillion national debt, and we are running record annual deficits. In fact, we're spending so much right now that we're racking up $1 trillion in debt every 100 days. We cannot go on like this. The laws of economics are hard and fast. So Lee, talk to us about the dangers we face with this level of unprecedented spending and mounting debt.
Well, fortunately and unfortunately, it'll continue for another year until we could get the president back into office. And I believe he has, you know, some excellent thoughts on immediately stopping the spending and the flow of money, such as, you know, examples like this, that we loan the money instead of just, you know, give the money away. And it has to be several areas that we find commonality on how to bring this budget crisis into a better light. So starting with, as the president has coined incredibly well, as he always does, drill baby drill, being energy dominant again will have a tremendous impact on our budget and deficit. So we can impact it tremendously that way. And in addition, the policy that he takes in receipt, he was spending over $150 billion a year just, you know, with illegals in our country. We have to address all areas, and collectively we could have a tremendous impact on our overall deficit as well as spending policies.
They have to stop spending, and the Fed has to stop printing, because we are going to hit a fiscal and monetary wall. And then what? I want you to tease that out for the average American, you know, the person listening to the show, because Biden and the Democrats sent us into this inflationary spiral over the last 3 years, where it's $30 now in many places for a dozen eggs. All right. So their lived experiences, crazy, protracted inflation affecting their daily lives. If the government does not get control over the spending, and we keep with this mounting debt, $1 trillion every 100 days, what does that look like for you and me and our fellow Americans?
And sadly, not just for you and me and our fellow Americans, but the generations to follow. You know, potentially we survive it, but, you know, our kids and their kids, it's just terribly unfair and wrong to do this to the kids. And, you know, I'll just use as an example, although in the big picture, it might be a small number, but to me, every dollar counts, especially when it's taxpayer dollars. So in one of the last omnibus bills that Pelosi got through in the prior Congress, there was, I forget the exact number, it was something like $2 or $3 million that they had in the bill for renaming of a park and creating some walking trail, Michelle Obama walking trail. Now you speak to the family that can't afford to buy that dozen eggs or is paying $8 for a jar of mayonnaise or $10 for a box of cereal. And you ask them how they feel about taking taxpayer money to the tune of millions of dollars to name a park after Michelle Obama for what reason, God only knows. And they can't even afford to feed their family. It's just terribly wrong.
Well, I mean, yes, of course. And everybody's lived experience, Lee, is that right now. But they can't seem to stop spending. And we are careening toward a wall where the economic meltdown in this country, it could send us, I mean, people talk about the Great Recession, it could send us into a Great Depression. And I remember talking to my grandparents about living through the Great Depression. Soup lines, they could not afford 10 cents to go to church to put in the basket, all right? So the American people are wholly unprepared for a depression along those lines, completely unprepared. They think that this is going to go on forever and, you know, it'll be okay even with high inflation, but they can navigate it. No, 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 no. We're heading for a crash of epic proportions. Yep. Lee, how do we get politicians? We know Trump is focused on this, but how do we get politicians whose whole career and re-election are based on spending money, bringing home the bacon to their states or their districts? How do we get the unaccountable Fed as well, which just prints trillions of dollars without question, without any auditing? How do we get all of these forces to stop and act more responsibly?
Well, we have to expose them. And there's a lot of organizations out there that are beginning to do some of what needs to be done with social media and mainstream media in respect to exposing these individuals. So, example, I'm working with a group called Job Creators Network, and that's you know where we co-authored the article with Alfredo on this piece on the loan conversion for aid. But there's lots of topics that we're working on where our interest is to expose this type of corruption or this type of spending, and that's where Matt Gaetz was very much misunderstood. What he fought for in Congress, and it wasn't just because whether or not people believe he had a personal issue, him and McCarthy, it was he wanted to have a balanced budget, and he wanted to have a budget for each department, each category, as the law stated that we should have, instead of just a constant continuing resolution that they know how to play the game so well, they wait to the last minute, they don't have the budget ready, so they have to get a continued resolution passed. Well, Matt Gaetz finally said, hey, enough of this, and if I have to look like the bad guy, he was willing to do that on behalf of all the American people and block them to continue to do that. Well, Johnson has now, unfortunately, passed a couple to try and create this transition. But hopefully that is where we wind up, that we have individual bills for each major area of the government. And through that, you'll have transparency, and hopefully we eliminate majority of the pork spending and self-interest spending that exists.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we've got to start somewhere. But, you know, politicians, government does not have a profit motive. Government has a power motive. So without the profit motive, there is no incentive for them to rein in spending, and that's why they continue to do it. And the Fed is just way out there on its own, totally unaccountable. So we do have our work cut out for us, but with ideas like yours, Lee, I think we can do it. I think we can do it. We got to start somewhere. So let's begin. Final question for you. Do you think, are you optimistic that we can do it? And are you overall optimistic on America?
Yes and yes is the short answer. And I'll share this with you. I had a meeting with the president a couple of months ago where we sat for a couple hours and went over a multitude of issues. And his ability to be focused and drill in and converse on the issues, totally impressive. And equally important, that meeting was the meeting that one of the issues I shared with him and the thoughts was about the conversion of aid into loans. And he got it immediately. He embraces great ideas, and he has a lot of great people around him. So I'm very excited and motivated for 2025, because I believe day one, January 20th, 2025, he hits the ground running. He knows what has to be done. He's done it, and he's going to be prepared to now take it, you know, Trump 2.0, and really get this country back in the right direction.
From your lips to God's ears, Lee. Yeah, so we're going to work around the clock between now and November to make that happen. Lee, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Lee Rizzuto, prominent businessman, longtime friend of President Trump's. President Trump appointed him to serve as U.S. Consul General to Bermuda. And he wrote this really important piece along with Alfredo Ortiz of the Job Creator Network, which is an incredible organization. We dealt with them when I was at Treasury, and they are amazing. Go check out their piece at Breitbart.com on converting foreign aid into loans to make sure we are all protected and begin to get this massive budget deficit and national debt under control. Lee, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, Monica.
Okay, guys, that is going to do it for me. Thank you so much for joining me for today's very important show. Super Tuesday, we're going to be all on top of the results and Biden's State of the Union, which is coming up on Thursday. So that is what's going to happen here later in the week. I hope you will join us as always. Thank you for being here, for checking out our sponsors, and for telling all of your friends, family, colleagues, people on the street about the Monica Crowley podcast. We are here to educate, illuminate, and entertain, and we're so glad you're here. Have a great start to your week, and I will see you right back here on Thursday. This episode of the Monica Crowley Podcast was produced by Behakel Entertainment, LLC.